This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Welcome to the Pro Football Time Machine. This is your host, Tom Pollen, along with Zozo the Cat. Before we start our journey, please take a moment to click on the subscribe button so you're ready to join Zozo and I each time we make a trip into the past. Now, join us as we slip from the present day through the time portal and begin our journey. Just say the name Chuck Bednarik, and you can be certain you're not talking about the first chair violin player with the Philadelphia Philharmonic. In NFL history, there are last names that define their franchises. For the Chicago Bears, that name is Butkus. And for the Green Bay Packers, it's Nitschke. Over 60 years since he last roamed the gridiron, Bednarik still means the Philadelphia Eagles. Bednarik bore the nickname Concrete Charlie, which perfectly described his toughness and the hits he delivered to opposing players. That's not where the nickname originated, though. Bednarik was a concrete salesman in the offseason. That's right, Zoe. He played in the days when nearly all athletes in all major sports worked full-time jobs in the offseason to survive financially. Sports writer Hugh Brown of the Philadelphia Bulletin wrote that Bednarik is as hard as the concrete he sells. In this case, the occupation fit the man, and not just on the football field. Chuck Bednarik was born in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and played football at Liberty High School. After graduating, he entered the United States Army Air Force. After he passed his gunnery test, he served as a B-24 waste gunner with the 8th Air Force. Being a waste gunner was one of the most hazardous positions on a bomber. B-24s flew at high altitudes, which exposed waste gunners to extreme cold. Their exposed positions in the middle of the plane also made waste gunners a primary target of enemy fighters. Between exposure and enemy fire, waste gunners flying missions over Germany suffered a 19% mortality rate. In other words, one of five never came home. Bednarik had described himself as a nice, easygoing kid before he enlisted in the Army and joined the Air Corps. Bednarik flew 30 combat missions over Germany and not only survived, he won the Air Medal with 5 oak leaf clusters and 5 battle stars during his wartime service. Bednarik also emerged with a toughness that defined him on the gridiron. You go through combat, you develop a killer instinct, Bednarik said. You become, what's the term, hardcore. Did I take that on the field? Yes, to be honest, I did. After World War II, Bednarik attended the University of Pennsylvania, where he played center, linebacker, and occasionally punted. In 1947, he led Penn to their first undefeated season since 1908. In 1948, he won the Maxwell Award, given to the best college football player as voted on by sportscasters, sports writers, and NCAA head coaches. Bednarik also finished third in the Heisman Trophy voting that year, only one of five linemen in the history of the award to ever finish in the top three. In the 1949 NFL Draft, Bednarik was selected first overall by the Philadelphia Eagles, ahead of Doak Walker, who was the winner of the 1948 Heisman Trophy. Walker was selected third overall by the New York Bulldogs. Bednarik was a rookie on Philadelphia's 1949 NFL Championship team, starting seven games at center that season. In 1950, the NFL changed the rules to allow free substitution. As the 50s went on, more players began to choose the side of the ball where they wanted to play, but Bednarik refused to follow that trend. He was a true 60-minute man, playing center on offense and linebacker on defense, rarely leaving the field, despite how punishing those positions were to play. Throughout the 1950s, Philadelphia struggled to stay relevant in a division that was dominated by the Cleveland Browns and New York Giants. Despite the team's troubles, though, Bednarik was playing at an elite level on both sides of the ball. Through the 1950s, it was common to see Bednarik's name on the list for postseason honors. As an outside linebacker, he was named to the Pro Bowl and earned first-team All-Pro honors in 1950 through 1954. He made the Pro Bowl and earned second-team All-Pro honors as a linebacker in 1956 and 1957. He earned both honors at center in 1950 and 1954. It was the 1960 season where Bednarik made the plays that cemented his reputation as an NFL legend. The funny thing was, Bednarik almost didn't play that season. Bednarik was ready to retire after the 1959 NFL season. He had announced the retirement, and the Eagles even held a Chuck Bednarik Day for their legendary player. What changed his mind? He found out that his wife was pregnant with his fifth daughter. He felt that he would need the money. When training camp opened in the summer of 1960, Bednarik was back on the field. He played exclusively at center as the season began, but in the fifth game, linebacker Rob Pellegrini pulled a groin muscle. Head coach Buck Shaw looked at Bednarik and said, "Get in there, Chuck, but don't pull any hero stuff." He continued playing both offense and defense the rest of the season and ended up playing 600 of 720 game minutes. It was week 9 against the New York Giants when Bednarik made the Frank Gifford crushing tackle he is most known for. Heading into the game, the Eagles were 7-1 and trying to keep the 5-1-1 New York Giants behind them in the Eastern Division. They held a 17-10 lead over New York in the fourth quarter with under 2 minutes to go, but the Giants were driving late to try and tie. New York quarterback George Shaw scrambled free of the Eagles' pass rush and connected with Gifford, cutting over the middle. Gifford made a move for the sideline as Bednarik closed and slammed into him. The ball flew from his hands and was recovered by Philadelphia middle linebacker Chuck Weber. Gifford was lying flat on his back, unconscious, as Bednarik celebrated. I know, Zoe, you love to celebrate your backyard triumphs, too. He wasn't celebrating the hit, though, as many assumed at the time, and some continue to believe today. Bednarik was celebrating that the game was over at that point and that the Eagles would be hanging on to first place in the division. The thing about the tackle was, even in today's NFL, it would be ruled a legal hit. It was the perfect storm of tackles, with Gifford turning just as Bednarik reached him while going full speed with the lowered shoulder. Gifford's later explanation of the hit exonerated Bednarik for delivering a cheap shot. "He didn't hurt me. When he hit me, I landed on my ass and then my head snapped back. That was what put me out, the whiplash, not Bednarik. What Gifford suffered, though, was serious. The concussion he endured kept him out of action for the rest of the 1960 season and all of 1961. In 1962, Gifford returned to the Giants, but as a flanker, not as a running back. Frank Gifford retired after the 1964 season. Gifford never held the hit against Bednarik. He later said it was perfectly legal. If I'd had the chance, I would have done the same thing to Chuck. Both men would later talk at awards dinners and once even play golf with each other. The Eagles finished the season with a 10-2 record, their best since their 1949 championship year, and faced Vince Lombardi's Green Bay Packers in the 1960 NFL Championship game. On the first play of the game, Eagles quarterback Norm Van Brocklin threw a pass that was intercepted by the Packers at the 14-yard line, but the Eagles defense held, and Green Bay had to settle for a field goal and a 3-0 lead. The Packers added another field goal to open the second quarter before Van Brocklin began to connect with his receivers. A 35-yard touchdown pass to Tommy McDonald and a 15-yard field goal by Bobby Walston put the Eagles up 10-6 at the half. A 7-yard pass from Bart Starr to Max McGee early in the fourth quarter gave Green Bay a 13-10 lead. Philadelphia's Ted Dean took the ensuing kickoff at the 3-yard line and returned it 58 yards, setting up the Eagles at the Packers' 39. Dean finished the drive with a 5-yard touchdown run to put Philadelphia back on top 17-13. Green Bay began their final possession at their 35-yard line with 1:05 left in the game. With the ball on the Eagles' 22, no timeouts remaining, and the clock winding down, Starr swung a pass into the flat to Jim Taylor. He spun out of a tackle at the 10 and was ready to rumble into the end zone when Bednarik showed up. He hit Taylor high and wrestled him to the ground. Taylor struggled to get to his feet to run one more play, but Bednarik was having none of it. When time ran out, Bednarik said, "You can get up now, Taylor. This damn game's over." Other than for kicking plays, Bednarik played every offensive and defensive snap. Despite his leadership on both sides of the ball and the game-sealing tackle, Van Brocklin walked off with the game's most valuable player award. Bednarik retired after the 1962 season, having only missed just 3 games in 14 years. The honors kept rolling in, though. Bednarik was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1967, his first year of eligibility. In 1969, Bednarik was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame, and in 1987, he was among the first group inducted into the Philadelphia Eagles Honor Roll, and Bednarik's number, 60, was retired by the team. Through his later years, Bednarik always took great pride in being the last of the two-way players. Players of more recent vintage, who dabbled with playing on both sides of the ball, like Deion Sanders, failed to impress him. They didn't play offense and defense on every down, and he wasn't giving up his standing to any of them. Chuck Bednarik left behind a legacy of excellence on both sides of the ball. The end of his career closed the book on 60-minute men in professional football. If he didn't carry the nickname of Concrete Charlie because of his off-field occupation, he still could have carried that nickname because he embodied it every day, on the field and in his life. Chuck Bednarik will always be admired as one of the NFL's and Philadelphia Eagles' greatest to ever play the game. Zozo and I hope you enjoyed this trip into the past with us to celebrate the life of Chuck Bednarik, the last of the two-way players and one of the greatest to ever play the game. Be sure to join us next time for a trip into the past in the Pro Football Time Machine.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.